Hello, returning happies and new listeners. This is Steve Bennett Martin.
And this is Stephen Martin Bennett.
And welcome to A Lifetime of Happiness, the podcast where we take you on our journey through some of the movies, TV shows, and other bits of pop culture that are helping to keep us happy, while hopefully bringing smiles to your face along the way.
And today, we're kicking off Magical March as we review how the fabulous Owen sisters broke their family curse and found true love in the 1998 cult classic Practical Magic.
But first, my love, what's been making you happy?
So, you know that I love campy things.
Really?
Yes. And you know that I love Kristen Bell.
We both do.
Yeah. So, you put the two together, and you have The Woman Across the Street from the Girl in the Window on Netflix.
What? That was a serious movie. It wasn't campy at all.
That was my favorite thing about it, is that the script was so campy, but they played every line dead serious.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so magical doing it that way because, you know, it could have been totally played for laughs. And the way they did it, you're listening to it and you're like, oh, they just said that.
Yeah. With straight faces.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part of it? Being that this is spoiler filled.
I did love her dramatic rain phobia that made her pass out.
Yeah.
And that, like, she's fighting it and crawling and passes out in the street.
Yes. And I love how her handyman's been repairing her mailbox for years.
Yeah.
All right. And you know what else has been making me happy?
I do not. Do tell.
Starting off Horizon Forbidden West on the PS4.
That is a sequel, is it not?
Yes, to Horizon
Zero Dawn,
which I played through. You enjoyed watching bits and pieces of it.
Yep.
And I only am in the prologue kind of city chapter right now, waiting to reconvene and meet up. But there's a lot of new elements, while a lot of the same, and they're kind of mixing well together. I took a brief break when they had some sort of like chess-like board game, and I'm like, I can't pay attention to this right now, because that was Friday afternoon, and I just wasn't feeling it. But yes, I plan to jump back into the game, because I want to see what awaits Aloy in the Forbidden West.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful game.
Yes, it certainly is. Now, before we jump into the movie Practical Magic, my love, why did you choose for March to be Magical March?
First, I love alliteration.
Yes.
And so after we did Final Girl February, I was like, what can we do that's M for March? And so I started going through things and I was like, you know, I'd been wanting to do Practical Magic and I'd been wanting to do The Craft. And I was like, let's just make it a theme. And then once I did that, then a couple other movies just fell into place. I was like, this is fun. It's going to be whimsical. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a good time.
Yes. And for a movie that had all the makings to be a blockbuster, it was not as successful as one might think. Why do you love Practical Magic so much?
So I love Practical Magic because it has my favorite girl, Nicole Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
My other favorite girl, Sandy Bullock.
Yeah.
It's got some Stockard Channing, Diane Wiest. It is funny. It's romantic. It's got that otherworldliness about it. And I do know why it didn't succeed. I remember the whole scandals when it came out. Middle America was not ready to watch witches.
Oh, no.
Because it didn't seem as harmless as Samantha and Bewitched. This seemed a little more real to them. And so there were, you know, a lot of Middle America was not having it.
Oh, that's unfortunate because it is a very nice movie.
It is.
For those unfamiliar, it's a 1998 American fantasy romantic comedy film based on the 1995 novel of the same name. The novel was written by Alice Hoffman, while the movie is directed by Griffin Dunn and produced by Denise DeNovi.
I don't know those names.
Well, Griffin is not just a director, but is more known for being an actor. He was Jack in 1981's American Werewolf in London.
I do know that. Okay.
And DeNovi is most known for producing both of the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movies, as well as the rom-com Crazy Stupid Love.
Crazy Stupid Love is so good.
So you do know them?
I guess I do. I just did not have an association with their names.
Now, the two main stars you've already mentioned, Sandy Bullock and Nicole Kidman, are two powerhouse actresses. What's your favorite works of them both?
Okay, so for Sandra Bullock, America came to love her in Speed.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ones that I really just took my love of her to a new level was she and Ryan Reynolds in The Proposal.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, like, rom-coms of that time.
Yeah. What about you? What's your favorite Sandy movie?
Probably my first ones, which were Miss Congeniality 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
She just did such an amazing job in them.
Yeah.
And that's when I fell in love with her. And, of course, I love me some good horror. So Bird Box was very fun and took the world by storm when it came out.
Oh, Bird Box was so well done.
Yes. And meanwhile, Nicole Kidman's been in almost probably just as many, if not more, things than Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites of hers?
So, funny shout out. There was this movie that we recorded off of TV when we were little called BMX Bandits that was kind of like The Goonies, but set with a bunch of teens on BMX bikes, and it was out of Australia. We loved it. We watched it on VHS, my brother and I, all the time. It wasn't until I grew up that I found out that the lead teen girl from BMX Bandits was Nicole Kidman.
So that's your favorite Nicole Kidman movie?
It is not.
It's just your first.
Yeah, it's my first. My favorite has to be Moulin Rouge. She, you know how I always say when an actor or an actress commits to a role, even the silly things.
Yeah.
Her performance in Moulin Rouge, especially when she's doing the, oh, dirty words, say your dirty words, and just rolling around and screaming. And it's just like the name game in American Horror Story. She's fully committed. And it's, you know, a lesser actress, it wouldn't have gone over as well. I also love her and The Others.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
And another Baz Luhrmann movie like Moulin Rouge, Australia with Hugh Jackman, she's fantastic in.
Gotcha. Meanwhile, I've come to love her more recently with both Big Little Lies, where she did some powerhouse performances.
Oh my gosh.
Even in the second season, which story-wise wasn't that great, the performances in the second season were right up there with the first. And I just love how batshit crazy she was in Nine Perfect Strangers.
Oh my gosh, she was so good.
I would go on a retreat and let her drug me anytime.
100%. Sign me up.
Yes. Now, both of the aunts were covered in our previous episodes. Stocker Channing was known for her role as Rizzo in Grease.
Yep.
While who else?
Diane Wiest was also Louise Keeley in The Birdcage, which was such an underrated performance,
mm-hmm.
but she did such a good job with that. And that was actually the first time I knew Diane Wiest. And came to love her. And then by the time I saw this, like, I was sold.
Yes. Meanwhile, Aidan Quinn was Benny in the 1993 movie Benny and June, while Goran Vishnik,
close enough,
was Luca on ER.
Yep.
And Armansky in the U.S. lesser version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Correct, on the lesser version. And most people know him from ER, and he was the good guy, so this was definitely a departure for him.
Yes. Now, the magic of this creative team was lost on its original audience, as we mentioned, with a budget of $75 million and a box office of $68.3 million from its release on October 16th, 1998.
It has more than made up for it now through DVD, Blu-ray sales, and streaming rights, but back in the day, it was considered a failure.
Yes, and IMDb summarizes the movie as, two witch sisters raised by their eccentric aunts in a small town face close-minded prejudice and a curse which threatens to prevent them from finding everlasting love. How'd they do?
I kind of like that because this is another one of those that has so many moving parts that it would be hard to really summarize it properly. And I would say this is close enough.
Well, then, since it's hard to summarize, why don't we just dive into a deep discussion about it?
Let's do it.
Now, it starts with the Owens women having been blamed for everything that's gone wrong in the town that they live in for over 200 years.
Yep. And this goes all the way back to Maria, the first witch in their family. She had dalliances with many of the husbands of the women on the hanging committee. That doesn't bode well.
No.
But she used her own magic to save herself from hanging. She stepped off the hanging platform, and as the rope became taut, it just snapped and everyone freaked out and ran away. But even though she had survived her punishment, which means they couldn't legally kill her again.
Yep.
She was banished to a small island nearby and turns out she was pregnant.
Yes, I remember she had hoped the baby daddy would find her, but then when he didn't, she cast a spell so that she would never know the pain of love again. But as her bitterness grew, that spell warped and turned into a curse on any man who dared to love an Owens woman.
Oh, that seems like foreshadowing.
Yeah, and it sucks balls that that's what happened, like that she brought it on herself. Like, not intentionally, but, you know, it... I know you have to be careful what you wish for in these magical movies. That's yeah. pretty much going to be a theme, I'm sure, throughout the month. But, you know, in terms of hoping never to be loved again, it ends up that that turns into that anyone who they fall in love with dies.
Yeah.
It's just, it's rough. Because if anything, I would think that, that kind of means that you're more likely to hurt every time you fall in love rather than never falling in love again.
Exactly. And that takes us to a fast forward so that we find out how our two lead sisters' father died. Because when you hear the sound of the Death Watch beetle, it means the man you love is doomed to die. And the family was out at the beach and they heard the Death Watch beetle. And it glosses over it real quick, but the father died. And then the girl's mom died of a broken heart.
Yes. Since then, their aunts, Frances and Jet, have raised the girls.
And I love Aunt Frances because she sets the tone for them right away. In this house, we have chocolate cake for breakfast, and we don't bother with silly things like bedtimes or brushing our teeth.
And dentists and oral hygienists roll over in their graves.
There's probably magical herbs and things that they have the girls chew that keeps their teeth so nice.
I would hope so, because both actresses grew into be beautiful women with great smiles. So it's definitely sending a message if you're like, and you don't have to brush your teeth and you'll end up with a smile just like Nicole Kidman.
And we have an entire generation of girls with their teeth falling out.
Yes, exactly. Now, the girls are bullied just for who they are by the children of the town.
Witch, you're a witch.
Very unoriginal, but yeah. It still hurts them because they're little. A young Sally's natural at magic, while Jillian's gifts are promised to come later. They then see a crazed townwoman pay their aunts a visit to put a spell on a married man she was in love with, and Sally vows never to fall in love, while Jillian can't wait to fall in love.
And right then, like, even watching it, you can be like, Sally is totally going to be the Sandra Bullock character, and Jillian is totally going to be the Nicole Kidman character.
For sure. And the way that Sally decides to protect herself from falling in love is she prepares a true love spell, creating a guy she believes will never exist. And if he doesn't exist, then he'll never die of a broken heart.
He'll hear my call a mile away. He'll whistle my favorite song. He'll be able to flip pancakes in the air. He'll be marvelously kind. His favorite shape will be a star. And he'll have one green eye and one blue eye.
Yeah, now besides his personality and kind of interests, the crux of the spell involves that this man will have heterochromia iridium, which comes from the Latin hetero for different and chromia for color. It's a harmless condition in which one iris is colored partially or completely differently than the other iris. Although it's fairly rare in humans, there are some celebrities we know with this condition, like Kate Bosworth, Mila Kunis, and Kiefer Sutherland, just to name a few.
Interesting. Do you know anybody in real life that has two different colored eyes?
No, I think that if you end up having it, you become a celebrity.
Oh, damn. I knew that there was something missing in my plan to become a celebrity.
No, but in all seriousness, I don't think I've ever met someone like that in real life. Have you?
No, I haven't either.
Now, as young adults, Jillian falls in love again and again and again, it seems. And she runs off with a guy who doesn't even care enough about her to talk to her sister before running away.
Yep. And Sally doesn't like the idea of her running away because they're supposed to be there for each other. And so Jillian promises that they'll grow old together in the house and they'll die together on the same day.
Because that's totally a normal promise that you make between siblings.
So
did you and Barry do something similar to that?
No.
Do you think Mickey and I did?
No.
No, I don't think that this is normal sibling behavior, but okay.
Yep.
They say, my blood.
Your blood.
Our blood.
And they take the knife and the scar from when they do that never heals, and they both have that scar on the palm of their hand for the rest of the movie.
I wonder if that will come into play later.
It does.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Now, all Sally wants is a normal life, which leads to your favorite quote.
Aunt Frances says, "My darling girl, when are you going to realize that being normal is not necessarily a virtue? It rather denotes a lack of courage." And I couldn't agree more.
Yes. It's,
being normal is boring. Don't try to fit in. Be you.
Yes. Meanwhile, Sally then does fall in love with Michael and has two girls, Kylie and Antonia, while Jillian falls for a guy named Jimmy Angelov, who seems to have a supernatural hold over her. Sally then wakes one morning to the sound of a Death Watch beetle. She tears up floorboards all over the house looking for it, but she's unsuccessful, and we see Michael get hit by a truck.
Sally goes to the ants that night, pleading for them to bring him back from the dead, and the ants refuse because it wouldn't be him that comes back. It would be something dark. They do admit that they cast a spell for Sally to find happiness, but they never, ever expected for her to actually fall in love with that man.
Especially since he wasn't the one from her true love spell.
Exactly.
Now, she begrudgingly moves in with the kids to her aunts and vows that her daughters will never do magic. Not even little Evan Rachel Wood.
Yep, who goes on to have a wonderful career later in her life, but it's really cute to see her as a preteen.
Yes. Meanwhile, we see that Jimmy is very possessive of Jillian in a not sexy way. He doesn't even want her to go to the bathroom without him, so she has to use Belladonna to drug him and escape to go back home to help a grieving Sally. The sisters can feel each other's thoughts through their scars from the night that Jilly ran away.
And I love that. I love that, you know, half a country away, Jillian can feel what Sally's going through. So she drove all night and day to get to Sally to be with her to help her heal. And Sally said she had plans to open a health and beauty apothecary, and Michael would have gotten the plant ingredients for her. And Jilly talks about how intense Jimmy is and how she feels weak in comparison. And then Jilly sneaks away in the night, her job done. And Sally does open up the apothecary shop with the amazing actress Margot Martindale working for her.
Yes. Now, during the exchange with the sisters, Sally does point out to Jilly, like, you love him so much that you need to drug him.
Yeah.
Is that how love works? And
because sometimes I just need to sleep. And, you know, I think that Jilly is just so trying to live in the moment that she's not realizing how bad it is, that she's not getting, oh, for me to be able to sleep, I have to drug him. Like, she's not getting that.
Yes. And for listeners who have to drug their loved one to get some sleep, that's not a healthy relationship, and you should maybe talk to someone for help.
Agreed.
You can reach out to us at happylifepod@gmail.com.
We are not professionals.
No. Now, Sally's daughters are still taunted by the town kids with the same rhyme.
Witch, witch, you're a witch.
And Kylie points a finger at one of them and hexes him with chicken pox to the horror of the mothers and the embarrassment of Sally.
I love that when she does that, she goes, do not point your finger at him.
Yes. Sally's daughters are obviously much keener to their magical abilities than Sally would like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they even are questioning the aunts later at home about their magic and the curse, while also throwing shade at their mom for not using her magic more.
And, you know, Sally is trying to come out of her broken heart from Michael. And she writes to Jilly that, you know, she's kind of done with love at this point. And, you know, alludes to the magic man that never was and never could be. And it's, you know, yeah. And it's a good transition point because Jilly ends up calling Sally in a panic and Sally goes off to rescue.
Yes. The ants say that they'll watch the girls and take them to the solstice ceremony.
I do not want them dancing naked under the moon.
No, dear. The nudity is totally optional, as you well remember.
Exactly. Now, at the hotel, they notice, like, once Sally gets to the hotel where Jilly is, they notice there's blood on the moon. And even though they had that perfect moment to get away, Jilly goes back to get her tiger's eye for good luck from the car, where Jimmy grabs Jilly and holds them captive and makes Sally drive.
Yes, he's drunk on tequila, saying, I'm very into sisters right now. He begins singing.
You were always on my mind.
They drug him with Belladonna and accidentally overdose him.
Oops.
We now have a dead Jimmy.
Uh-oh.
they bring his body back to the ants to bring him back. Sally says, no, he'll come back dark and unnatural.
Jimmy says, that's fine. He's already dark and unnatural.
Yeah, they don't care what he comes back like as long as he comes back so they don't get blamed for his murder.
They use a spell invoking Hecate to reverse his death.
Yep, in the spell, they use whipped cream to make the pentagram on his chest, because you work with what you have.
Yep.
And as they're about to put the needle through his eyes to finish the spell, his eyes open, he comes back to life and immediately begins attacking Jillian, so they have to kill him again. Again. Yep, this time giving up and burying him in the yard and vowing not to tell the ants. Sally tells Jillian, you have the worst taste in men.
So, they mention Hecate, which is one of the few spiritual deities that they mention in the movie.
Yep.
And Hecate is actually a Greek goddess of witchcraft, the moon, and all that roams at night. Hecate is a dark and mysterious goddess of great magic. She was the only child of the Greek titan Perses and Asteria. And despite her titan parentage, Hecate actually fought alongside Zeus and the Olympians in the battle against the titans. Hecate is known as the gatekeeper between realms, which makes sense why the Owen sisters were invoking her. She's often shown guarding the crossroads and all those in-between places, with the ability to see and commune with the dead. Hecate was Persephone's friend and guide in her yearly journey down to Hades for the winter.
Excellent. Thank you for that deep dive, my love.
You're welcome.
Now, the ants and the girls return from the solstice celebration with happy reunions for all. One might think they're going to be okay, and nothing bad will happen, and the movie will end right there.
You would be wrong.
Oh, okay. What happens then?
We get some comedy for a bit because we're going to focus on the reunion portion of it. And all Sally wants is to be part of the school's parent phone tree. Like if there's a snow day or something like that, they start at the top of the phone tree and then you call some people and then those people call some people and down. She's never selected because she's a witch.
And it's a popularity contest.
Totally. Jilly shows up in the meeting taunting all the moms. Yep, I'm back, ladies. Hold on to your husbands. Woo! With many of the moms gossiping about Jilly and one calling her a slut. And what's great is that mom's binder shuts on her finger and Jilly goes, that wasn't me. And the sisters laugh together. And it's showing how Sally actually really needs this partner in crime and somebody back that's going to be on her side no matter what. And of course, then Jilly does use her magic to have Sally at the top of the phone tree with the line of, now that was me.
I also do think that she was responsible for the binder.
I think Sally did that because somebody called her sister a slut.
Oh, true. Now, that night, toads begin crawling out of the grave that they bury Jimmy in. And obviously, that can't be good.
Nope. And then we hear the ants down in the kitchen. Eye of newt, toe of frog, wing of bat, tongue of dog, adder's fork, blind worm sting, Barbados line is just the thing. Fraggy assault like a sailor's stubble. Flip the switch, let the cauldron bubble.
I don't know that spell. What does that invoke?
One midnight margaritas.
Count me out.
That's true. And yeah. It brings the sisters down and everybody has fun dancing. And to the, you put the lime in the coconut and drink it all up.
Yes, but then that quickly turns as they get drunk and They start slinging insults at each other. And funny story, according to Sandra Bullock in the commentary for the movie, the actresses actually got drunk off of some very bad tequila that Nicole Kidman brought on set.
I bet you they had a fun night that night because watching the scene, it's one of a lot of people's favorite scenes. And I guess it feels really authentic.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, that was them actually bonding.
Yes. Meanwhile, toads continue to come out from where they buried Jimmy and the ants after singing,
you were always on my mind.
They freak out Sally, reveal that tequila they were drinking from was left on the porch.
Uh-oh.
It's the same bottle they used to poison Jimmy with the belladonna.
And then Brimfell, company's coming.
The sisters refuse to tell the ants what happened, so the ants leave the next morning to teach the girls a lesson, but not before they use rope from Aunt Maria's hanging to protect the younger girls first.
I mean, clean up your own messes.
Yes. Later that morning, a rose bush grew overnight where the body was, or is, and at one point Jimmy's feet were even poking up from the ground, but then they went back under.
Kind of like the Wicked Witch of the East in Wizard of Oz, where her feet sink underneath Dorothy's house.
Yes, while Sally's chopping down the roses, she's approached by special investigator from Tucson, Gary Hallett, looking to speak to Jillian.
That's never a good thing.
No, he questions the sisters and Sally's a horrible liar. Makes me look like smooth on my toes.
Yeah.
Jilly uses her feminine wiles, which don't work at all.
No, like, and you could see that she's so used to being able to successfully seduce people, and she's a little thrown off that it doesn't even, for a fraction of a second, work with Inspector Hallett.
Yes. Gary then shares that he's looking for Jimmy because he murdered a woman after branding her face, just like what he was about to do to Jilly.
Yep.
Before taking Jamie's car back, he takes some of the belladonna that fell on the back seat to check into what that mysterious herb was.
Yep. And I love when Gary questions the townsfolk and he gets an earful of gossip about the sisters, including we get to see the boy that Kylie had hexed previously, who now actually does have chicken pox.
Yes. And we also hear how they jump off their roof and fly on Halloween night.
Yep. And that they make placenta things.
Yes. Ew. We have a friend that makes placenta things.
Yes, but that's only when she's asked to do so.
Well, hopefully she doesn't go around stealing people's placenta. That'd be a really odd flex.
I don't know her life.
Yes, the next morning, Jillian and Sally's daughters are working on a spell to banish an unwanted person to send Gary away, and they stumble across the spell that Sally cast as a child to remind us that the man of her dream has two different colored eyes and can flip pancakes in the air. Kylie, like Jilly at that age, can't wait to fall in love.
Of course. And Gary shows up for breakfast, and Sally opens up to him about how her magic is like his badge. Magic isn't just the spells and potions. It has a power because you believe it does. When Gary asks if they killed Jimmy, Sally says, oh, yeah, couple of times.
Yes. Then the girls over breakfast see how Gary is the man from Sally's spell, like between the different colored eyes and the badge being a star and
the pancakes. Yep.
So they
throw the syrup into the sea.
Yes, they certainly do. And all looks like it's about to go smoothly. But then a toad burps up Jimmy's ring right in front of Gary, who takes it and threatens the sisters that they better find a good lawyer, even realizing that something must have been in the syrup.
Crap. Every time something's about to go right and you're like, oh, it's a romantic comedy. And then you're like, oh, everything's awful. And of course, this causes the sisters to fight, with Sally saying she's always cleaning up Jilly's messes. And Jilly saying that Sally is holier than thou. And at least Jilly lived a life while Sally just always wanted to fit in.
Yep. Sally runs off to confess everything to Gary while she's in the midst of confessing and taking the full blame. Again, protecting Jilly, Gary says that it isn't up for them to decide what happens to Jimmy, but that he does need to be held accountable.
Sally says, well, he has been punished.
Yes, Gary offers to protect her and kisses her, and only then does Sally realize he has one green eye and one blue eye and freaks out and leaves.
Yep. Sally hears Jilly and the girls' cries for help in her mind and rushes home. And back at the house, Jimmy's ghost corpse thing comes out of Jilly just as Gary rushes in after Sally. And Jimmy goes to, squeeze Gary's heart, but his badge ends up protecting him, and then he uses that to banish Jimmy.
Yep, Gary admits to reading Sally's letter 1,000 times and that he felt pulled there. Sally then confesses to both the murder and the spell from her childhood. She says he should leave because they can't tell the difference between love and the spell. He says curses only have power when you believe in them, and he doesn't, but that he also wished for her too.
Do you think it matters that the spell brought them together or if it was fate?
I think that it's one and the same. I mean, at this point in our marriage, you were like, hey, I only met you because I made a spell 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I'd be like, well, I'm too into it now. It doesn't matter to me, whether it was me natural or you using the spell. I would still love you either way.
Oh, that's very sweet, darling. There's something I needed to tell you.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it off air.
Okay.
What about you? Do you feel like it matters, the difference between a love spell and true love? Can a spell bring true love?
I don't think it can. I think a spell can open you up to love, and I think a spell might bring the potential for love your way, but I don't think you can actually make someone love you. I think that all the ingredients were there, but a normal regular spell won't actually affect somebody's free will.
Yes. Unlike in next week's episode.
Yeah. That's a good example. Stay tuned for the craft next week.
Yes.
Jilly is still possessed by Jimmy, it turns out. And she pulls Sally in close and says, I'm very into sisters right now. And Sally knocks the Jilly-Jimmy hybrid out just as the ants come home. And they're like, I guess not in the nick of time. And they talk about how they need a coven to cast Jimmy out. So Sally uses the phone tree, coming out as a witch officially while the aunts and the daughters prepare for the spell.
Surprisingly, all the women show up, even the nasty ones, all with the intent to truly help, healing some childhood wounds on both sides.
Yeah, and it's a really good scene that it's some levity for a moment while, you know, some of the women are acknowledging that, you know, I always wished I could have seen inside your house. And it really, like, at that moment, you know, while Sally is focused on other things, it is kind of a, you know what, maybe they can accept me after all type of moment.
Yes, it's much needed levity while Jilly's in the next room over, slowly dying.
Yep. And when Frances says, grab a broom and form a circle, the women realize it is very real and very serious. And they begin to chant and try to channel Jimmy out with their vibrations rising, and it's all reaching a fever pitch, and Jilly's in the middle of it just writhing and screaming.
Yep, Sally can't handle seeing Jilly like that. The spell isn't working, and Jilly is dying, and she asks Sally to let her die and let this be done. Sally begs her to stay. We're supposed to die together at the same time, and this is not that day.
So Sally has a plan. She gets the tequila, and they create an opening in the circle, because while the brims were closed, Jilly Jimmy couldn't get out of the circle. And Jimmy goes for the tequila, and some of the women grab Jilly and hold her while Sally uses the my blood, your blood, our blood. And the coven grabs hands in a really dramatic way that still gets me every time, where it's like the clasp, 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 clasp. And it's so powerful. And in a flash of light, Jimmy is banished into a cloud of dust.
Yes. They then take that said pile of dust and take their brooms and shoo it outside on top of his grave before dousing it with the gross potion.
Sally gets a letter from Gary that Jimmy's death has been ruled an accident and that they used the ring as an identifier for his body after a fire, letting us know that Gary falsified an entire death and body. And it makes you wonder, what body did he use? Did they dig up from under the rosebush and he took it back with him? Or it's kind of unanswered, but you can see that he broke the law for them.
Yes, how romantic.
Yeah, in the letter, he did return the ring, which they add to the burning pile of the rosebush. And Sally says, what would you do, Jilly? To which Jilly responds, with a hint of growth on her part, what wouldn't I do for the right guy?
Later, Gary arrives and kisses her in front of the rest of the women in the family, who all cheer them on.
Sally provides voiceover narration at the end. Did our spell travel back in time and heal a broken heart? Did our joined hands break the curse? I'd like to think so. Here's what I do know. Always throw spilled salt over your left shoulder, keep rosemary by your garden gate, plant lavender for luck, and fall in love whenever you can.
Yes, we then get to see the women dressed as like traditional like black-garbed witches on the roof of their house on Halloween. And they fly with umbrellas, just like the town rumored them to all do, while the town looks on and cheers.
So good.
Yes, what are your final thoughts on the movie, my love?
I love it. As time goes on, I actually enjoy it more. There is sincere chemistry between the four lead actresses. The story is really good. There's chemistry between Aidan Quinn and Sandra Bullock. It all really works. And I was kind of shocked that the movie didn't do better, because whenever you watch it, it's one of those things of, all the pieces really do work.
Yes, maybe it just was a bit ahead of its time.
Could be. What about you, darling?
I enjoy it as a romantic comedy. I forget how dark parts of it are.
Yep.
but that's okay, because obviously we don't mind the dark parts.
Yeah.
In fact, next week's movie is going to be a little even darker than this as we dive into The Craft.
Yay!
Yes, but before then, we'd love to hear what you think about this movie and about the idea of magical March in general,
yeah,
you can do that by emailing us at happylifepod@gmail.com.
Or you can get in touch with us on all the socials, whether that is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at Happy Life Pod.
Yes. And until next time, everyone,
stay happy.
You're still here, which is great, because there's something we probably forgot to mention this episode.
That is correct. Each episode, as we're discussing movies, music, and games, there's a good chance we've used a small clip or two from the original source material.
Yes, and those clips are not ours. We do not own the rights to any of the music or clips. They were used to help solicit a discussion to appreciate the original source material.
And with that, if you are still listening, you likely really appreciate our material as well.
I mean, how could you not? And if you've enjoyed this episode, then you should also ask yourself, when's the last time I told a friend to check out A Lifetime of Happiness?
If your answer was not today, well, it should be.
Yes, so go tell your best squirrel friend about our podcast today, and don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening to get new episodes each Wednesday.
Stay happy.